This is Radio Superior 1949, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from 1949. This is a true story of our past. Step back with us to another time. We bring you now inside the KUWS radio studios and the Martin and McKenna Show.
This is the voice from the land of beautiful lakes. It's Monday night, May 23rd, 1949. This is Jack McKenna reminding you that the husband who has no secrets from his wife has either confessed or been found out. Lou Martin has the 6 o'clock news. Rapid Ray is in with the sports. The museum curator has something creepy to tell us about, I'll bet.
He's going to be talking about children's antique tea sets.
Oh, hoop-de-doo. But the way he tells it is creepy. Rapid Ray is in with the sports, and Harriet will have a touching story about a boy with polio. The 6 o'clock news is brought to you by the 7th Street Supermarket, where you can get 3 packages of Dove soap for just 85 cents. Good evening, Lou.
Good evening, Jack, and good listeners. Former Defense Secretary Forrestal has taken his own life. The Big Four meet in Paris as West Germany's constitution is founded today. And Congress is critical about leaks on atomic weapons. We begin our world report from Washington.
This is the nation's capital. Jack Bell here. James V. Forrestal, wearied from 9 years of government service, took his own life over the weekend. The Navy convened a board of inquiry to look into the death leap of the 57-year-old from the 14th floor of the Navy's towering hospital in nearby Bethesda, Maryland. In the House speeches, Republican Representative Case of South Dakota said, quote, "The nation has never had a man more sincere or more devoted to duty." Representative Lorge of Connecticut called Forrestal a shining example of selflessness and high faith. Democratic Representative Boggs of Louisiana told a hushed chamber that Forrestal was the victim of Washington's most devastating weapons, the weapons of words. Forrestal was the first Secretary of Defense, a wearing job that he gave up as a sick man in March. Before that, he had been Secretary of the mightiest Navy the world has ever seen. And before that, he had served as an assistant to President Franklin Roosevelt. So far as was known, the former secretary left no note, but on the radiator near his hospital bed was found a book, an anthology of world poetry. A red ribbon lay between the pages open to Sophocles, Chorus from Ajax. That poem tells a profound and hopeless tragedy. Secretary of State Dean Acheson, away in Paris, spoke of Forrestal's steady self-sacrifice. Retired Admiral Chester Nimitz declared that, quote, "We who worked with him will never forget his great contributions." In the weeks that followed Forrestal's hospitalization, he seemed to be on the road to recovery. He received visitors, among them President Truman, made phone calls, and read the paper. In Washington, this is Jack Bell. Come in, Paris.
This is Paris, France. Stan Turner reporting. The Big Four Council of Foreign Ministers met today to solve the problems of Germany and decided to add the Austrian question to their agenda. They agreed on a 4-point agenda. First, problems of German unity, including economic and political principles and allied four-power control. Second, Berlin, including currency questions. Third, preparation of a peace treaty for Germany. And fourth, preparation of an Austrian independence treaty. Like Germany, Austria is occupied by the four powers: U.S. Secretary of State Dean Acheson, Foreign Secretary Ernest Bevin of Britain, Foreign Minister Robert Schuman of France, and Foreign Minister Andrei Vyshinsky of Russia, assembled in the flag-festooned pink marble palace. At almost exactly that same moment, the new constitution for a West German government was proclaimed in effect as delegates of the 11 states in the three zones put their signatures on it in Bonn. This new constitution, the basic law for 45 million Germans, is expected to strengthen the hand of the Western delegates here, since it envisions a new government by Germans for Germans by mid-July. This was their first session since the council deadlocked in London in December 1947 on a German peace treaty. The three Western powers are expected to press Russia for immediate and urgent consideration of Berlin, the lifting of the Soviet blockade of Berlin, and the Allied counter-blockade of the Soviet-occupied Eastern Germany opened the way for these new talks. Once there is an ironclad agreement on Berlin, Western sources say the conference can proceed to other questions. Biggest of these is establishment of a united government for Germany. This is complicated by the fact that a West German government is soon to take over in the Western zones, and that Russia is expected to sponsor a separate German government in her zone. Another major item involves withdrawal of occupation forces and Germany's final frontier. In Paris, this is Stan Turner, calling West Berlin.
Hello, this is Max Jordan in Allied-controlled West Berlin. The three Western military commanders today rejected a petition from the West Berlin city government to seize strike-bound elevated railway stations in the city. Strike against the Soviet-appointed management of the railways, now in its third day, was marked by a weekend of bloody rioting in which Soviet-controlled police used guns against mobs of strikers and their sympathizers. The decision of the military commanders of the United States, Britain, and France, in effect, reaffirmed the property rights of the Russian-controlled railway system. Rights were established in 1945 by four power agreements. The strikers, numbering about 12,000, had been clamoring for Western intervention. Brigadier General Frank L. Howley of the United States called the commandant into session to discuss the city government plea and other aspects of what he called an intolerable situation. In West Berlin, this is Max Jordan reporting, calling the state. I'm in Washington.
This is Hightower here in D.C. Republican Senator Arthur Vandenberg of Michigan called today for a complete inquiry into the attitude of Atomic Energy Commission Chairman David Lilienthal on all security problems. A congressional committee already is looking into the commission's operations, and one investigator, Republican Senator Hickenlooper of Iowa, has demanded that Lilienthal resign. The investigation has revolved about the award of atomic educational grants to admitted communists and others who failed security clearance for work on secret matters. Vandenberg says, quoting now, "It is unthinkable to me that communists should be educated at public expense," end quote. He added that he must withhold final judgment on Lilienthal's work as AEC head until the security issue is cleared up. Vandenberg, a member with Hickenlooper of the Senate House Atomic Committee, says the importance of the security matters cannot be ignored because he says Senator Hickenlooper is one of the best experts on this matter. Hickenlooper accuses Lilienthal of mismanagement of commission affairs. Lilienthal flared back that the commission's record of the buildup of a substantial stockpile of atomic weapons is the best answer to that demand. In the nation's capital, this is John Hightower speaking.
Also from Washington, the House Appropriations Committee has orders to cut the Marshall Plan by 15% by July the 1st to keep the budget from going into the red. And in London, the U.S. Embassy sent to the British Foreign Office today the request for the return of stowaway and American communist leader Gerhard Eisler. KUWS Radio News Time is 6:09. Jack McKenna has this word from the 7th Street Market.
Indeed I have, old buddy. 7th Street Supermarket. I always delight in doing their commercials. 10 Fells Naphtha soap bars, can you believe that? For 79 cents. Frozen strawberries, a 1-pound box, for just 39 cents. Homegrown potatoes. You ever grow potatoes? You don't have to because they have them for a peck, just 59 cents. Not bad. Easy to tell, folks, why 7th Street Market is now a supermarket. Listen to these prices. Spry, 3 cans, pound and a half can for 91 cents. Does three large packages for just 85 cents. Three Sweetheart soap bars. What a sweetheart. For 29 cents. 7th Street Supermarket always has super prices. Luke?
A veteran of the European campaign will be reburied in Superior tomorrow. The body of Private David Summers will arrive at the LeSage Funeral Home in Superior. Private Summers will be reburied at the Soldiers' Circle at Greenwood Cemetery. Private Summers was serving with the U.S. Infantry in Belgium when he was killed in action August 29, 1944. He was born in Hibbing, Minnesota, but grew up in Superior. He is survived by his parents, two brothers, and two sisters. The Blomberg VFW Post will furnish full military honors. Nine women, including five war brides, received their American citizenship today. Judge Carl Daly naturalized the new citizens after they passed their tests in Superior. The war brides include one from Great Britain, two from Australia, one from Canada, and one from Ireland. Superior Juvenile Police Officer Fred Jackson says cap guns are fireworks and are therefore illegal. He says several cases of stores selling caps have come to his attention and that the merchants have been warned. Violators will face fines. A jury's been selected in a lawsuit over a Superior man struck by lightning while on the telephone. KUWS radio newsman Mike Simonson reports.
It's a strange case, Lou. Norman Hall is suing Wisconsin Telephone Company after he was injured last August 17th when struck by lightning while talking on the telephone. Mr. Hall says Wisconsin Telephone was negligent in not providing proper safeguards installing his telephone. Judge Walter Dahl has seated a jury of 10 women and 2 men. Mr. Hall's attorney, John Fritchler, says his client should get $100,000 for injuries and taking that phone call, Lou.
Concrete will be poured on Highway 13 south of Mellon this week. Construction will continue through the summer. Ashland County Highway Commissioner Frank Anderson says 19 miles of Highway 13 will be paved. This means it'll be concrete from Ashland through the entire county. And Jack and good listeners, Superior School Superintendent Angus Rothwell honored a retiring principal and teacher today. House school principal Miss Ethel Ballou and teacher Ina Sweetnam were given gifts.
Miss Sweetnam. What a nice, nice name for a teacher.
Better than Miss Striker.
Or Miss Hit You in the Head If You Don't Behave. Thanks, Lou Martin, who was always teacher's pet. Let's check the forecast for this Monday, May 23rd, 1949. If you've already planted your tomatoes, you'd better cover them tonight, folks. There's frost in the forecast. But tomorrow we should have fair skies and 60 for a high. But now it's music time from the 1948 movie Romance on the High Seas. Here's Doris Day and It's Magic on the Martin and McKenna Show.
You speak and I hear violin.
Doris Day making some magic on station KUWS. The music is by Jules Stein with lyrics by Sammy Kahn. All righty, Lou. We've got a problem.
We?
Well, we've got too many guests and too little time.
Once again, how does that make it we? We didn't book too many guests. You did.
Oh, be a pal. Keep your old buddy out of trouble, will you?
Now, that's an impossible order. Let me introduce Douglas County Museum Curator Gerald Stowe. Good evening, sir.
Yes, good evening, Mr. Martin and Mr. McKenna. I understand the quandary of time that you're in, so I'll make haste about our latest exhibit.
Well, now there's a good fellow. A creepy good fellow, I agree, but a good guy nonetheless.
Yes, thank you. It's the black floor-length cape, isn't it?
The bloodless skin.
The slicked back helmet hair.
You might want to clip your fingernails, too.
Yes, I don't like to do that. I might lose some blood.
I see we're making record time. Your new exhibits, Mr. Stowe.
Yes, thank you. We have old children's teacup sets in our new loan display. The little tea sets and doll dishes were donated by Nancy Banks. The toy sets belong to her mother and are wonderfully ornate. One teacup has a boating scene, while another has an old mill painted on it. There are various landscape vistas on the other cups. Very lovely indeed.
Can you pick it up a bit?
Yes, I'll endeavor to do that. A little Nancy Quist brought an old blue willowware set and aged cooking utensils once used by her grandmother. Very interesting.
Any frosting left on the utensils?
No. I thought you were in a hurry.
He is, but he can't help with the remarks.
That's rather annoying, yes.
Yes.
Faster, please.
Yes. Other new exhibits include an old engineering map of Lake Superior, donated by Dave Anderson, and a book entitled The Log of a Trout Fisherman by Arthur Tenney Holbrook about his experiences as a lad fishing in Ashland and on the Brewer River. Yes, I'm done.
Great job, Jerry. Here's Tommy Dorsey and Song of India. Another great job on the Martin and McKenna Show.
Thank you.
Tommy Dorsey and Song of India. Hiya, Ray.
Hiya, Jake.
Now, let's be rapid.
Oh, you know, the point is, I'm not really rapid.
Ah, give it a shot, old buddy, old pal, and keep me out of trouble.
Okay, sport fans, here we go. The hit famine that has been hanging heavy, over the heads of the Superior Blues this week, was dispersed by a wealth of base hits yesterday as manager George Sobeck's boys handed Fargo Moorhead a 20-5 thumping at Municipal Stadium.
Faster, Ray, faster.
Okay. Led by former University of Wisconsin star Big Jim Thompson, Superior batsmen collected 23 hits. Joe DiMaggio will give his ailing heel a try tonight against the St. Louis Browns. The $90,000-a-year star has been out of action since spring training.
Go, go, go.
Yank manager Casey Stengel says it'll be good to have Jolton Joe around, even just to pinch hit.
Yeah.
Jersey Joe Walcott and Ezard Charles, who will battle for the World Heavyweight Boxing title at Comiskey Park June 22nd, will train 6 miles from each other outside of Chicago.
I'm falling asleep. Get going.
Oh, come on. The Third City Softball League will begin play tomorrow when the Classic League starts its schedule. The Superior Cops will square off against the 173rd Field Artillery at Blaine Field. And the Vasa Tavern will tangle with the East End Tavern at Franklin Field.
Oh, this is terrible. Come on, speed it up.
Finally, it's the end of the year for the Femme City Kegglers. The champs of the City Women's League will be honored at the Dreamland Ballroom with a big clam bake tomorrow night. The Vogue Bootery team is Dolly Andrews, Jenny Stevenson, Bernice Dower, Anne LeBlanc, and Edna Heyer.
That's better.
Tonight's sports is brought to you by Vic Special, thirst-quenching, healthy, and delicious from Northern Brewing Company of Superior. And remember, everyone loves a good sport, Jake. Darn you.
How about doing that again, buddy?
No, thanks.
On with the good time music, friends. Here's Dick Hames, and I'll get by on Martin McKenna's Speedy Show.
I'll get by as long as I have you. There may be rain and darkness too. I won't complain, I'll see it through. Poverty may come to me, it's true, but what care I, say I'll get by.
Dick Hames, and I'll get by on station KUWS. All right, quick now, Lou.
I don't know why your bad planning has to become everyone else's crisis.
Oh, jeez.
Let me introduce community editor, the lovely and compassionate Harriet Fiery, with this touching story about a boy fighting polio.
If you can do it real quick like there, that'd be great.
Chef.
That's Mr. Compassionate himself.
This is a story of Bradley Josephine of Fargo, North Dakota. Get the respirator.
What? Who?
Mr. Compassionate just woke up.
This is how the story begins, Jack. It's told from a real-life experience of a father. The doctor darts back to the hospital room where my 4-year-old son, Bradley Joe, stricken with polio, writhes in his oxygen tent. The iron lung is wheeled in as doctors and nurses carry Brad from his bed. His face is gray. There is no perceptible breathing. Attendants snap the respirator cover shut. Doctors fit the collar around Brad's little neck. All you can see is the curly head with the ashen face so motionless.
This is terrible. Why don't they hurry? For crying out loud, help the boy.
The electric cord is plugged in. The rhythmic huff and clank of the bellows on the iron lung begins. This respirator, the iron lung which first struck terror in your heart, becomes a close friend because it's breathing for your boy. Your boy who has bulbar polio. The iron lung huffs as Brad lives by intravenous feedings until the wonderful day comes again when he can swallow normally. Penicillin shots are administered daily, not to fight the polio virus, because there's no known medicine which can conquer it, but to ward off pneumonia.
Don't they know we need a cure for polio?
They know, but it isn't easy.
Well, the bills piled up. The first 16 days of the hospital stay came to $415. Add on another $136 for the private room needed for the iron lung, and $155 for oxygen. Special nurses needed around the hour, worth every penny, but it cost $550. That's more than $1,000 for just the first 16 days, and it's only one case of polio. This is the worst epidemic year for polio in United States history, with more than 40,000 cases anticipated. Is it any wonder the National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis funds are exhausted? You see, we were given a telephone call by the foundation saying they will pay for everything we can't afford. So, from Bradley Joe's dad and all of us, please give generously. Lewis?
Community editor Harriet Fiery with an important story.
Wow! The only thing I'm in a hurry to do now is to give to the polio fund. We have one story left, folks, and it's about one of my favorite actors, Jimmy Stewart. But here's Glenn Miller and his orchestra, and I've got a gal in Kalamazoo on the Martin and McKenna Show.
She's a toast
of Kalamazoo.
Years have gone by.
My, how she grew.
I liked her looks when I carried her books
in Kalamazoo.
I'm gonna send a wire, hopping on a plane,
leaving today.
Am I dreaming? I can hear screaming.
Hiya, Mr. Jackson, everything's okay. A-L-A-M-A-C-O. Oh, what a girl, a real pimperoo.
I'll make my bed for that freckle-faced kid I'm hurrying to.
I'm going to Michigan to see the sweetest girl
in Kalamazoo.
Glenn Miller and his orchestra on station KUWS with Tex Beneke on the vocal and the Moderners. All right, gang. Big news. Still with us, Jerry?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Good. And now, Lou, the big news.
Wedding bells will ring in August for Jimmy Stewart, one of Movie Dome's most stubborn bachelor holdouts and eligible bachelor. He'll be marrying Mrs. Gloria McLean. Stewart says he popped the question to the former New York model at a dinner celebrating his 41st birthday. They plan a wedding in Hollywood.
All right. Everyone has to do an impersonation of their favorite actor, or in Harriet's case, actress. I'll start.
I'm scattered. You're spoiled. Conceited. Selfish. And I love you, and I don't give a damn.
Okay, Lou, your turn.
We'd better get these wagons a-moving. We're burning daylight.
Lewis, I didn't know you could do John Wayne.
Is that what it was?
My turn.
Ruff, 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 ruff.
What's that, Lassie? You say Timmy is trapped in a mine shaft?
Ruff, 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 ruff.
You say, you say it's the mine shaft by the lake, and not the one near town?
Ruff, ruff, ruff.
What's that you say? Timmy's also mad at his mom and dad because they make him do too many chores around the ranch. What's that, girl? What's that? You say the neighbors are getting a divorce?
And this would be an impression of Lassie the Wonder Dog?
Close. Lassie the Gossiping Dog.
Okay, good. Harriet.
Yeah, very good.
Well, I'm no good at this, but I'll play along. So here goes. You and your carousing Dexter. Well, I really don't care anymore. I really don't.
Yes, very good Lauren Bacall.
Kate Hepburn, I'm afraid.
And a very good Katharine Hepburn, I might add.
Okay, Mr. Curator, let me guess. You're going to do an imitation of Peter Lorre.
Yes, no, he's too distinguished sounding to try to duplicate. I wouldn't assume to try to do Peter Lorre, yes. I thought more in the lines of the betrothed himself, Mr. James Stewart.
What do you mean this is Pottersville? This is Bedford Falls, and it's a wonderful life.
The curator gets scarier and scarier. And that's it, folks. We'll be back same time, same place on your radio dial with our own voices, the good Lord willing, and we don't lose Lou and the museum curator to Hollywood. For Lou Martin and the gang, then, this is Jack McKenna wishing you all a good night.
Want to hear my Humphrey Bogart?
No.
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1949. An original production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Harriet Fahrig is played by Jennifer Simonson. other performances by Duke Scorridge, Pat Kelly. All events reported on Radio Superior 1949 are actual accounts from the Superior Evening Telegram. This is your announcer, Mark Snow, speaking. Good night.